Welcome to the 86th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. Welcome. Well, I've been on vacation again. This time, I actually got to visit the Stanford Inn in Mendocino, California. So before, a few episodes ago, or several episodes ago, I interviewed Jeff and Joan Stanford, and I also interviewed Sid, the wellness director as well. And I was so intrigued with the cookbook and the description of the area that we decided to take a little vacation. And it was one of our first vacations that we have ever, that we've taken in quite some while, or quite some time, that we didn't have a race associated with. So we went without any need to sign up for anything or get up early to go for a race or anything. So it was purely pleasure. And but we did run. The weather was remarkable. If you're just about any place but Mendocino, California, you're probably experiencing hot summer weather right now. And the temperatures in Mendocino were low in the 50s at nighttime and high in the mid-60s during the daytime. So we had a fireplace in the evening. Of course, the big draw for us in the Stanford Inn was their entire vegan fair and their outside gardens that we could roam around in. So it was quite nice. So we went for runs along the redwoods on trails all around there. Sid hosts an ultra marathon there recently. So we kind of checked out some of the course. Hopefully maybe we'll actually get to participate that the next year or so. But we ran the trails through the redwoods. We ran logging trails. We ran along the Pacific Ocean, right along the beach. So it was a variety of single track and logging trails and beachside trails to run on. So it was quite different for us. I've not run trails in quite some time, and only a little bit of experience in North Carolina in the past. So it was all new to me. And it was really fun to get out and not pound. And I have to say that, you know, after running 6-8 miles and doing a hike of 6-8 miles, really didn't feel it much. And so I think that's a testament to the easier impact in some of the trail running. So that was awful nice. So we would run in the morning and then come in for the Stanford Inn breakfast. And we had a group of six. And so some of the things they had, a hollandaise sauce, tofu hollandaise, or a mushroom hollandaise sauce, kind of an eggs benedict, but without the eggs. It was with mushroom. There was a buckwheat waffle. There was French toast. There was a breakfast burrito. There were roasted potatoes and a tofu scramble. So it was great, great breakfast. One of the things that I really enjoyed was the fresh juiced carrot juice in the morning. So it was a great way to finish up after the run. Dinners there were also magnificent, again, all vegan, but we had a ravioli with a nut cheese. There was a tofu stir fry. There was a sea palm dish. I posted a picture of that on Instagram. So the food was, they had some great appetizers with some homemade flatbread, some hummus, some salsa. So there was a whole host of very intriguing dishes to enjoy. They also surprised you with two vegan cookies every day. So that was a fun treat. And they were quite good with some organic coffee in the room. Again, after some of the cool evenings, that was really nice. Actually, I have to admit, we ate the cookies in the morning before the run with coffee. So that was good. They weren't without oil. And they used low oil in most of their dishes. I certainly didn't taste a lot of oil in the breakfast or the dinners, but you know, obviously the cookies had some oil in them. But they were a great treat. And, if you remember, I was on vacation, so I think that's all fair game. And we certainly ran it off in the, garden area. Was beautiful. They have raised beds with a lot of vegetables, fresh artichokes and greens, and different things growing. It's kind of mid-season for them in some respects, but they were very pretty. A lot of flowers, sunflowers there, apple trees. The big thing that was in full ripeness was blackberry vines everywhere. And so we enjoyed picking blackberries along the trails, and that was a great dessert as well. In the town of Mendocino, we did have lunch one day, and we were able to get some falafel and pita with a vegan sauce on cucumber tomatoes, which was really good. So we enjoyed that. So a lot of vegan food was all good. The interesting thing that I got to observe, and one couple that was with us was not plant-based, and the other couple was plant-based. And we knew this, and they knew that it was vegan food when we got there. There was a little teasing going on, and they were apprehensive. You know, we had had discussions on the merits of whole food plant-based nutrition before. Interestingly, both of them were physicians, and one retired that had some health issues, and one that was still working. And they were resistant, attached to dairy, attached to meat. And we had some lengthy discussions about the merits of adopting a whole food plant-based diet. And as physicians, you know, the first thing that comes up was, well, if there were only evidence. And, you know, I just had to smile on that one because obviously there isn't a lot of evidence. And it's kind of funny that, you know, one of the final frontiers of arguments is there evidence that vegetables are good for you? And, you know, since the beginning of time, it was always eat your vegetables, not eat your meat. So, you know, mother always knew best. So it's kind of funny that the thing we hang on to is the meat and cheese. But nevertheless, you know, we talked about the China study, and we talked about Dean Ornish's work, and we talked about Dr. Esselstyn's work. I'm sending some papers their way so that they can read some scientific studies, but it's not hard to find. You know, I always refer people to nutritionfacts.org. And if you go there, you know, in one of the most recent published pieces, you know, the Nurses Health Study and the Harvard Health Study that was published in two articles published in 2012, over 100,000 people. And basically, you know, cholesterol is the number one reason for death, and smoking is number two. And red meat is associated with increased cardiovascular mortality as well as total mortality and cancer. And if you eat nuts, it increases your longevity. If you eat fiber, it's very protective, adds as much to your lifespan as 4 hours of running. So that's 4 hours of running a week. So, you know, we know things. Animals have cholesterol, plants have fiber. So plants are healthier than animals. So no matter, you know, how you take it, you can't really take the protein and the fat and the cholesterol. It comes in a package, and it's how your protein is packaged. And plant protein is packaged with a whole host of phytonutrients and protective compounds, where, you know, meat proteins are associated with cholesterol and fat and free radical formation. Protein found from plants, basically in the form of the most abundant source, beans, nuts, and seeds, you know, associated with increased longevity in the presence of decreased refined carbohydrates diet. So it goes on and on. It's really not hard to find a reason that eating plants are healthy. It's more about, you know, wanting to hear something good about your bad habits. So let's talk a little bit about this dairy thing, you know, vegetarian versus plant-based. Some people think that they'll do the transition first vegetarian, and a lot of people do. But when you hear people talk about their plant-based journey, a lot of people were vegetarian for a lot of years. And then they say, well, they finally figured out where cow's milk came from, and then they let it go. And so those are more of the ethical vegans, so to speak, that were vegetarian and think they were doing a, you know, doing a good thing, which they were by not eating animals. But the milk is every bit as a horrific industry. And I think that, again, when people are, and it's mainly cheese that they're addicted to, and there's so many alternatives if you need cheese right now. I make a little bit of toppings that are cheesy with nutritional yeast and some soaked cashews and soaked macadamias, nuts. There's lots of recipes around there. You can buy some better nut cheeses. The stores that are, cheeses that are in the plant-based cheeses that are in the store are actually pretty poor quality. There are a lot of oil, so I would completely steer away from anything made with a bunch of oil. And again, if you're doing this for health reasons, you want to try to get away from a tremendous amount of fat. So you've got 2 ounces, 2 to 3 ounces of nuts to play with during the day. And if you're going to eat those, and you know, so one way or another, you can mix a little bit of nut cheese out of them, or you can put them on your cereal or your breakfast or your salad. But it's not for having cheesecakes and, you know, big cheesy dishes every meal that you have. So I think that, you know, people that struggle with their weight have to be really aware that any kind of nut cheeses are going to be, you know, high in calories. But I digress from this milk thing. You know, I think if you look at it, the countries that eat the most milk, have the eat the most dairy, have the highest amounts of osteoporosis. They have the highest rates of prostate cancer and breast cancer. So there's no science that actually, when you look at milk and bone health, there's no improvement over hip fractures with the intake of milk. Even if you look at the elderly, or if you look at people that there's a Harvard study that followed teenagers. Over time, there was no decrease in hip fractures as those people got old. And actually, the protein in milk is really what the, you know, the casein and whey proteins that and the milk sugars are difficult and very harmful for people. There's a disease called galactosemia, which people can't tolerate the galactose, and they actually have a tremendous amount of bone loss and shortens the lifespan. So, you know, the people, there's a 100,000 people study in Sweden for 20 years that showed in females increased risk of heart disease death, increased hip fractures with those consuming some milk. The galactose in milk is just not tolerated by humans. The cow version of this. And if you look at the other thing associated with milk is the pesticides, because again, anything in that's filtered through milk, whether it be the milk of breast milk of humans or the breast milk of cows, pesticides and medications are very much concentrated in the milk. And so you get pesticides in cow's milk that can be they're associated with increased risk of Parkinson's disease. And this can be in skim milk versus, you know, regular milk. And the milk is actually greater than the cheese as far as the dangers of it. Huntington's disease, which is a genetic disease, but the onset is earlier in people that have a high milk consumption, and it's thought secondary to galactose. Acne is largely because of milk products. The insulin-like growth hormone in it is thought to be able to cause increased puberty, especially in girls. So there's just not a good reason to have children, especially drink cow's milk. The other thing is, you know, babies, the first year of life, they do so much better if they're on human breast milk. It's the right amount of protein. Babies only are able to digest a small amount of proteins because they're used to getting the enzymes from mother's milk. So when people are starting to feed their children earlier and earlier, you're seeing a lot more allergies because their gut is not intact. And they're more likely to form antibodies to some of these proteins, some of which can actually attack the islet cells of the pancreas, and there's an increased risk of juvenile diabetes. So, you know, given the opportunity, I would never have a child or a relative that had children, if I had anything to do with it, consume any kind of cow's milk in any form. And, you know, and if you look at it from an animal perspective, you know, the calf is taken away from the cow early on. And, you know, we see these pictures on Facebook, you know, where somebody's rescued an animal and they're feeding it from a bottle, whether it's a little goat or a little something, and everybody oohs and ahs how nice it is. But that is what happens with every calf. So if, you know, if that image, you know, tugs on your heartstrings, then how can you possibly drink milk from a cow when the same exact thing is happening? You know, and the, I guess the other vision that I get is that, you know, okay, so do we give racehorses milk so that they can, you know, run faster? Is there something to, you know, in that to make? No, they don't. They're fed, you know, they're weaned at an early age, and they're fed appropriate food. So, you know, we as humans are the only thing that's given this life liquid from another species, and we just need to be more aware. And I think kids need to be aware. And once they are, and we take these images off the carton of, you know, Bessie the cow and being so happy, that I don't think the kids really will want the milk or the ice cream either from cow's milk. You know, there's so many alternatives, be it almond milk or coconut milk, that you can have ice cream as well for a snack for a kid if you think your child's going to die without it. And there's so many dire consequences. But I really think that, you know, when it comes to this problem with children, that we can't be plant-based or it's so difficult to convert them, it's mainly you know, what they see on TV and peer pressure. But I really do that if you give the kids what they need to know to make an informed decision, they'll realize that they don't want to be a part of this cycle. And, you know, again, kids aren't nutritionists either. So, you know, you do have the upper hand when people say that their grandchildren are coming to visit. And I had one a guy that was doing pretty well on a plant-based diet and actually had a daughter move in, and she was doing some of the cooking, and they were doing it together, and they were all losing weight. And then this daughter moved out, and another daughter moved in with children that were pickier, and he completely fell off the wagon. And I said, you know, like, well, who's buying the groceries? You know, and you know, you need to make a stand for it. You know, and sometimes people don't feel comfortable educating their, you know, maybe they don't know enough that they feel that they're suited to educate their families. But, you know, point them in the right direction, give them a book, you know, let's look it up. It's worth looking up so that you can explain it to the reason why you're not doing it to your grandkid. You're not drinking milk or eating cheese to your grandkids or people that come to visit. I received a question by email from someone that asked why they lost more weight eating whole grains than a similar quantity of potatoes. And I don't. There's really no evidence that you'll lose more weight if you just eat whole grains or you don't process potatoes. If we look at, you know, white potatoes, certainly have on, in general, a higher glycemic load than, or higher glycemic index than sweet potatoes and whole grains. However, you also have to look at how they're processed. Eating cold potatoes will actually decrease their glycemic index more along the lines of whole grains and sweet potatoes. Certainly eating the skins, depends on what you're eating with them, what other nutrients in your diet. But for the most part, you know, potatoes are, and I'm talking, you know, white russet potato with the skin on, baked, not fried, not in French fries, or boiled. typically, you know, a large potato has about 281 calories. They have 6 grams, roughly 6 grams of protein and 6 grams of fiber. They have a tremendous amount of vitamin C. They're a very good source of B vitamins. They have a tremendous amount of potassium and magnesium. So they're really a superfood when you look at it, especially bang for buck, to have a potato. And, you know, this week I posted on Instagram, a lunch that I really, really liked that I hadn't done before because I don't think about it. But I took a large bowl of spinach and put it in a Tupperware to take to work with me. And I took some fresh salsa and I baked a potato. And I started baking the potato while I was getting ready for work, and it wasn't quite baked yet. So then I took it to my office, and we have a toaster oven at the office, and I baked it the rest of the way when I was seeing my last few patients. And then I put the baked potato over top the spinach, and I steamed the spinach just for a couple minutes. And then put the fresh salsa on it. It was a delicious lunch. So I had a very, very healthy lunch with spinach, the potato with all the vitamins and the tomato salsa. And it was fresh salsa, not the jar type salsa. So, I mean, you know, and it's a good way to get fiber into your diet. So that was 6 grams of protein. There was probably another 5 or 6 grams in the spinach that I ate, maybe 1 or 2 grams in the tomato that I had. And then I had some fruit, you know, and so you can think about each piece of fruit has a couple grams of fiber that you consume every day. So you can see how you can get your fiber up. And again, you know, we're going to get to the fiber next, but you want to get in as much fiber because that's probably the most important substance that you can get in during the day. Has the most benefits to your overall health. And is probably the one that we're lacking the most. So then if I'm going to go turn the stone over and say, okay, now we'll look at a cup of long grain brown rice. The glycemic index is a little lower for the most part than the potato. If you eat a cup of brown rice, there's a good bit of calories in that, 685 versus that 281 of the potato. There's 6 grams of fiber. There's a little bit of fat. Oh, if I go back to the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, the potato had a 26 milligrams of omega-3 versus 80 milligrams of omega-6. Again, that's a better ratio of 6 to 3 than the rice was 81 milligrams of omega-3. But it had 1,850 milligrams of omega-6s. So if we look at that overall ratio, again, it's not near as favorable as the potato. You know, but, you know, again, if you like it, there's certainly a lot of B vitamins in rice, the whole grain rice, and there's a lot of magnesium and potassium as well. There's no vitamin C. If I were to compare the rice versus the potato, the potato I think is actually a better bang for your buck as far as nutrients. If you turn the tide and you look at a cup of whole wheat spaghetti, that takes you down to 174 calories with 7 grams of protein and back to 6 grams of fiber. The omega-3 is 14 versus 284 of omega-6s, but it doesn't have near the mineral and vitamin content that the rice or the potato had. So I really don't think you can blame the degree of weight loss comparing potatoes versus grains. I will say that you probably can get in more calories on the grain side of things. Then you're going to get in with eating a potato. There's very few people that are going to eat more than one large potato at a setting. I think that, but most of the time, if you look at the speed of weight gain, when you think about weight or weight loss, it takes 3,600 calories in the negative to lose a pound. So that doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen over a day. So 1 meal of rice versus potato is certainly not going to, you know, make or break you. I would be more inclined to have somebody do a diet history over a 2-week period, a diary, so that they know exactly what they ate. Most of the time, when I go over a patient's diaries in the office, they've gone out to eat a couple times. And when you go out to eat, you typically get a little bit more oil. You may get a bigger portion. And then the other thing is snacking. We've become a culture of snacks. The snack foods are advertised all the time, and we think we need snacks. And I often get the question, so what do I snack on? And it's like, well, you don't necessarily need to snack. And if you open the refrigerator and you don't want to snack on fruits or vegetables, you're probably not hungry. You're just bored. So, you know, again, I like Dr. Furman's viewpoint when you look at the nutrient density of the foods that you're taking in. So are the foods you want to snack on, are they part of that, you know, say average 2,000 calories a day? Are they part of that nutrient dense calorie bank that you're allotted, or are they more empty calories? Because if they're more empty calories, then you tend to eat more of them and you're not getting the nutrients and you know, the weight loss starts to stutter. So, you know, I would have you go for the fiber. I think that when you look at aiming to get, 70 grams of fiber a day, and if you just focused on that during the day, am I getting, you know, and kept a diary of, am I getting the fiber that I need? And you kept the diary accordingly. And when it came to food choice, it's like, okay, well, this is a high fiber food or a low fiber food. If it's a low fiber food and I'm going to snack on it, then this really doesn't fit into my calorie budget for the day. So I think that would be, a way to try to look at things. When we talk about fiber, the most important thing that fiber does is it feeds our good gut bacteria, and only the good gut bacteria can process the fiber and, turn it into short chain fatty acids that are very protective. And there are three that are extremely important that the good gut bacteria produce, and that's acetate, propionic acid, and butyric acid, or butyrate. And those short chain fatty acids are very, very protective. The butyric acid maintains the gut lining. It maintains the intactness of your colon so that you don't absorb proteins that you shouldn't as far as allergens go. You don't have leaky gut type syndrome. It protects your colon from cancer. So that's extremely important. And the propionic acid basically works a lot like metformin and Lipitor, in that it helps decrease the propionic acid decreases the HMG coenzyme reductase enzyme production, so it's really the rate controlling pathway to make cholesterol. So it functions a lot like Lipitor. It also helps to function a lot like metformin to decrease the glucose production in the liver. So by eating a high fiber diet, you're essentially decreasing your need for these medications. Again, you need a lot of them, and you need to grow this good gut bacteria. The other thing is that acetate will help the feeling of fullness. It decreases the glucose utilization speed so that you feel full longer, you'll eat less. So again, eat the fiber, and there's so many benefits. I guess the other thing that I've heard this week is family and family support. It still blows my mind that a spouse won't support another spouse in becoming plant-based. There's really no downsides, and their diet's going to be completely nutrient-rich. It can only get better. I don't understand why someone's not, willing to try early on. I can understand that, you need to get educated, and it's good to get educated together. That's why we do the classes in our office, and we encourage the spouse to come, especially the cook to come, so that they learn how to make the meals. I heard Dr. Bernard say a really interesting thing, and that he has people design their own menus from what they already like. We'd certainly build menus in our office. I usually tell in our classes, I tell people what I've had to eat. We go over what other people have had to eat for the week. We tweak different menus. But I think if you're just starting or you're contemplating becoming plant-based, then I think the idea of getting a calendar out and trying to go through 2 weeks worth of meals that you already know are plant-based and that you could eat. Yeah, breakfast is easy. Most people eat the same few things. So, oatmeal and blueberries, oatmeal and fruit, a big bowl of fruit, some sort of whole grain cereal if you don't want to do oatmeal. That's an easy breakfast to do. you know, you can be more, you know, you can make pancakes that are dairy-free and egg-free, as you can waffles. It takes more time, and most people don't do that during the week. You can certainly make tofu scramble that takes the place of eggs if you do eggs during the week, and you can do a tofu scramble pretty quick in the morning, but not really quick. So the oatmeal or fruit is the quickest way to go about it. There are certainly English muffins. The Ezekiel brand makes English muffins that you could put a small amount of nut butter on and have a bowl of fruit. That would be a quick breakfast. So, you know, that's certainly doable. I carry a jar of fruit with me for my, what I call my second breakfast in the morning, that when I have a little bit more time, I can sit down and eat. And I usually put walnuts and pumpkin seeds in that jar. You know, lunch is a great opportunity for a large salad with peppers, cucumbers, onions, red cabbage. Again, red cabbage carries the biggest bang for the buck as far as cabbages because it has so many nutrients and phytonutrients and flavonoids in it. So I try to have, you know, every vegetable that I can get my hand on in my salad. It's a large green salad. It's not going to hold you all afternoon, especially if you're used to eating some big sandwich. So you need to have some source of starch or grain or bean on it that's going to, you know, help hold you. So whether you make the tuno, which is sunflower seed tuna fish, or to put on top of your salad, or you make some oil-free hummus to put on top of your salad, or just a half a can of beans or a whole can of beans that are rinsed on your salad, is a good way to increase, you know, being filled or being full for the afternoon. The potato was a great thing. A lot of times I'll use a half avocado in salsa because that half avocado gives me the oily feel because it is fatty, but again, I'm only using a half, but it gives me some more calories. And there's nutrients with the avocado. It's just not pressed oil out of something. So, you know, that's one thing to eat. There's always leftovers. There's always soup. So a lot of people like soups. You know, there's not a vegan, there's not a plant-based, healthy canned Campbell's soup or, you know, the traditional soup. Dr. McDougall has a brand of soups out that, you know, are a possibility. But better yet, make your own soup that you have in a big jar and take with you. So you can make the menus out. So this is what I might have for, you know, or what do you already have for lunch and tweak it. If you are a sandwich person, then change it to avocado and tomato and onion and lettuce type sandwich, or change it to a bean sandwich made with, you know, a wrap stuff with pita or stuff with salad. Dr. Esselstyn used to say that he took leftovers and made his leftovers in a large pita. And she would stuff anything they had the night before in a large pita, and that's what he took to work all wrapped up, and that's what he ate because he wanted to eat quick and go back into surgery, and that's what he did. So, I mean, you can. There's no rules to it. Just write down what you think you like, and it's plant-based. And then, you know, then move on to dinner. So maybe it's pasta with, you know, instead of meat sauce, you'll do marinara sauce, but you'll add some vegetables in it because, okay, so what vegetables do you like? Do you like spinach? Do you like mushrooms? Do you like artichokes? So you throw that in there because you want to get the vegetables and you're looking to get the fiber. So maybe you'll have two or three meals that you really like, and, you know, and then you rotate those around. But if you can come up with those meals and write them down and have them in a calendar, you'll go a long way to what I call staying on the wagon, because you have something to look for as opposed to just grabbing something or deciding to go out and to get into trouble. You know, again, getting back to the cheese and dairy thing, I would suggest that you don't make that part of your compromise as you're starting your plant-based journey. I would aim to get all of that stuff out of your diet right away. Now, whether you're 100% successful or not, you know, that may not be. You may have days where, you know, you got into some dairy, you got into milk. Last week, I came home and my mother said she found this great cabbage kale, or this great kale carrot potato soup at a health food store, and it was gluten-free. And she really was kind of fooled on the gluten-free thing. She kind of thought it was plant-based, and it's like, I bet you there's dairy in there. And sure enough, there was milk in it. When we make potato soup, we don't add any milk. We let the potato broth make things creamy for us. So you really, you know, so she didn't appreciate that just because it looked like milk, that it was milk. But she was really sick all afternoon because she's not used to consuming dairy. So you can get fooled by that, but it's not the end of the world. She was still plant-based after that. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to buy that in again, and I'm a little bit irritated that, you know, I didn't see it. When you're looking on labels, I will give you the hint that you don't have to read all the ingredients. Even if there's milk in it, it's the very last ingredient. They'll put contains milk on the bottom of it or contains eggs. Some things are a little bit more tough that they may have whey protein in, and you kind of get fooled if you're not looking for it. But for the most part, it'll say right on it, contains milk. So stay away from it. But again, if you screw up, that's okay. But at least for the majority of times, you're not getting into that. You know, I'd rather see you go out and you know, mess up with some chicken broth and something, or meat broth and something, or even have a piece of meat or piece of fish when you went out on your transition, than to be vegetarian for the next 20 years, eating, you know, large amounts of cheese, which are extremely high in salt and fat. That's going to really impede you from achieving your goals, especially reversing diabetes. It's going to be almost impossible to reverse diabetes and our heart disease if you continue to eat cheese and dairy products. So, I just don't like that, you know, that part of the transition. I'd rather, again, that you just accept that you're not going to be perfect and work to be perfect. And again, focus on the fiber aspect of things so that you're increasing the fiber in your diet and you're going to crowd out those bad things over time. Getting back to my original point, which I seem to be straying from a good bit today, but you know, a patient came in and said that he had friends, actually they were family, that they went to eat quite a bit with over the years, and since they became plant-based, now they don't invite them to go out with them. They don't even give them the option to go out with them anymore, and when they invited them over to their house, they wouldn't come if they were going to make plant-based food. Well, I you know, unfortunately, you know, it's very sad to me that somebody would choose what was on the menu as opposed to the person. You know, I think I would probably, you know, try to talk to them a little bit if that relationship was important and say, you know, hey, I'm doing this for my health. I really don't care what you eat. You can choose what you want. I'm not going to judge you by it. You know, we'll work around if you can, you know, if there's just one thing on the menu, I'm willing to compromise and go so that we can spend time together because I want to spend time with you. But I really, you know, would like you to try to support me through this. And, you know, and if they don't, then they don't. And I guess, you know, you end up having to make a decision, and hopefully you'll choose your health over or someone's silly choices of food over you. But, it you know, it does become a difficult situation. And, you know, in that case, I would also look to other groups of people that, you know, will tolerate you. Their meetup groups are a good place to start. So you can go online, meetup.com, and you can find plant-based groups in your area that you can, you know, you can join. You know, even calling ahead to certain restaurants and finding a place that you can go and get plant-based food. And a lot of restaurants, especially if they have a chef and they're not a chain restaurant, they'll be more than happy to make you something without dairy and without oil. So, you know, give that a try. And you can also talk to your friends. It's like, hey, you know, I've called these two restaurants and there's stuff available for me to eat if you wouldn't mind. You know, I'm not going to say anything at the dinner table, but, you know, I've already arranged for a plant-based meal. So, you know, I'd love to go to dinner with you. You know, and we'll see how that goes. With our friends at the Stanford Inn that weren't plant-based, you know, they were okay with, you know, they made a few comments. And, you know, even as physicians, they asked some crazy things as far as, you know, is this vegan, is this not vegan? And they couldn't believe that, you know, there was some butter on the table that wasn't vegan. And they I forget what else that, you know, they asked. But, you know, it's funny when people just, because people just haven't thought what their food is, where their food comes from. And I think that that's, you know, an amazing thing when people start to actually think where their food came from and how it impacts their body. But, you know, if you can make your gut healthier and decrease your risk of colon cancer and decrease your risk for statins, I think it's a no-brainer. The other not so pleasant thing, about your colon, that if you, you know, it takes about 16 hours to get things through your colon, and if you, and a large portion of that is in your, and it could be 12 to 16 hours, and a large portion of that is the transit time through your colon. If you eat meat, it takes a lot longer, and you eat meat and dairy. And so if you eat meat and dairy and you take pain medication, stuff can lay there and rot. And those good bacteria, they cannot make anything good out of that that meat and that dairy. It rots in your gut, and it makes toxins. And those toxins sit there and smolder until they get out of your system. So you can see all that. So all the poisons and everything else, and the chemicals and the pesticides, just get to sit in your gut for a long period of time, and they're actually killing your good gut bacteria. And you know, so it's not helping anything out. You know, it's stuff we don't like to think of. But Dr. Birkin once said in an interview that you can tell the size, you can tell the colon health of a population by the size of the cars that the doctors drive in the parking lot. And if the doctors have big cars, then they're probably not, the area probably doesn't eat much fiber, and the surgeons have a lot of work. And that's basically the size of it. But, there's constipation is cured. It's another thing. Is constipation will be cured on a whole food plant-based diet. And if it's not, then there's something dreadfully wrong, and you're getting a lot of oil, or you're getting other things in your diet that you shouldn't. And it's a low fiber diet. So if you increase the fiber in your diet and you get rid of the stuff that's going to rot in your diet, things will all work its way out in a very healthy way and make your colon very happy. So in closing, a few things I'd like you to try this week, if you're game or you're in your transition, is one, count the amount of fiber that you're getting in your food for a couple days. And if you're just making the transition, do a menu of all the things you like, and write those down so that you can see, and plan your days out accordingly, so you're less likely to slip off the proverbial wagon. Then the last thing is perhaps try to communicate with some friends or family that aren't very supportive, and ask them just point blank, I'd like to be plant-based for my health. There's a lot of good evidence, and I'd like you to support me in this. And I'm really not going to force you to do it, but I just like you to support me in my journey. So give me an email. Let me know how that works out. I am actually changing my nutrition classes. I'm moving it to a new building where there's a kitchen available, and we're going to have them every week in a row. So for six sessions, so they'll be an hour long they're actually going to be on Thursdays now for an hour. And so I'll be able to get more people in the room. And again, I'll have kitchen access as opposed to dragging everything into my office. We'll still have our shopping trip on the third, so this will allow me to cycle through and have new sessions more. So hopefully we'll get more people through the plant-based nutrition conferences. I'm looking at February 4th for a full-day nutrition conference with breakfast and lunch and guest speakers and cooking demos. So mark your calendars for that if you'd like to come to sunny Port Charlotte in February. It's a great time of the year. The sky's always sunny and it doesn't rain. The other thing is that I can do teleconferences with you to help you out with your medications and to see where you're going wrong if you'd like. So we have the ability to telemed appointments. So you can get on the website at drdelaney.com and get in touch with us to do the paperwork to do that if you'd like. Please check out the website for other things that are happening. You can email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com with any questions, or let me know how your menu planning and family discussions are going. So that's jamiedelaney@gmail.com. And I hope you have a great week, and may have an interview next week. Thanks. Be plant strong and go get some exercise.